Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Today, my guest is Brian St. Pierre of Precision Nutrition, and had a lot of fun talking with Brian. He's a very knowledgeable guy. We'll be talking about nutrition, supplements, a lot of really cool things. Brian was an intern at Eric Cressy Performance and has his degree in nutrition. Started out as an engineer and decided he hated it and decided to follow his dream, so to speak. And we'll talk about him and his past and lots of really cool stuff. Before we get to that, a few quick announcements. First of all, I want to remind everybody that on September the 16th at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, I am going to be hosting a webinar for the Hadley School for the Blind. I'm really excited about that. And I'd love everyone who's listening to register for it and be there and ask some questions. And the more people that are there and the more involvement there is, the more fun it's going to be and the more good information I'll be able to get out to you folks. So hopefully I'll see some of you there. And if you are, let me know you're a regular listener. So that's September 16th. And we'll have a link to the Hadley School in the show notes. And once they have the registration information out, I'll put that link up in next week's show notes. Upcoming guests. Got some really cool people. The interview with Brian today ran a little bit long, so we're going to do it in two parts. We'll have part one today and part two next week. We're going to be having Juliet Starrett on in the very near future. She and her husband, Kelly, are the owners of one of the very first CrossFit gyms in San Francisco. They've been in the industry for a long time, and they recently started a charity, and Juliet will be talking about that as well as talking about running her CrossFit facility. She's an interesting lady. She's an attorney, and she's also in the gym business. Also, we'll be having a couple interesting wrestling guests coming up. One is a personal favorite of mine. He's actually a close friend of mine named Les Thatcher. A lot of you might not know Les because he retired from the ring in the 70s. He's made a few comebacks, but since the 70s, he's commentated. He has trained people. He had a school. He had his own private organization in the Ohio area. Anybody who used to watch Smoky Mountain Wrestling in the 90s knows him as the host of Smoky Mountain Wrestling along with JR. And I can pretty much guarantee that any current WWE superstar you can name, Les has had some exposure to and had at least to some degree a hand in his training. So my buddy Les Thatcher will be on in a couple weeks, and we'll talk about his career, talk about what he told Hulk Hogan back in 1980, and get some good road stories, some behind-the-scenes things about some of the guys, and that's just going to be a fun conversation. Also, finally have committed with a mental health professional, which has been something I've been looking for, working towards, trying to find someone to talk about obsessive compulsive eating and binging and food obsessions and all of that kind of thing. So I'm really excited about that. As it turns out, it's one of Brian's coworkers at Precision Nutrition. It's a lady named Krista Scott Dixon. She has her PhD. She's written several books. She was a college professor, and she gave that up to go into the nutrition field. And she's a really cool lady, and I'm looking forward to speaking with her. Got a lot of good things coming up over the next few weeks, so stay tuned. Got something going next week I'm just going to share with you guys because I'm kind of excited about it. Real excited about the Hadley thing, but also next week I am doing a presentation at the local lighthouse here in Broward County. They have a group they call their Lifetime Learners, which meets once a month, and I'm guessing it's got to be a somewhat older group of people. and they bring in guest speakers to talk about a variety of things. And I'm going to be talking with them about movement, mobility, the importance of exercise, especially for seniors, especially for visually impaired people who tend to be more sedentary. And my hope is that I'm going to be able to get them to start a little program there at the Lighthouse, maybe on an ongoing basis. So that's next Thursday, and I'll report on how that goes next week's show or the week after. Now, before we get to this week's interview, gotta pay the bills, audiblepodcast.com, my wonderful sponsor. My favorite place to go find new reading material, just for the simple fact that it's not the same voices I hear all the time on RFB, on Talking Books, and so on and so forth. There's some wonderful readers there, and, you know, they volunteer their time, and that's awesome. And I wouldn't be enjoying all those great books without them, but I really enjoy Audible because it's a variety of people. Some of the books have multiple readers, and all of the nonfiction, a lot of the nonfiction, I should say, which is an area that I tend to read a lot in, is actually read by the people that wrote it. So it's really kind of cool. The inflection in their voice goes where they think something is actually really important. So that's audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk. Go to that web address, sign up for the free 1 month trial. Get yourself one free download. Check it out. There's thousands and thousands of books there. And you won't be sorry. I mentioned last week the crews that we're putting together, the people on my blindcafe.net exercise class have all decided they want to meet up. And we've actually got about a half dozen people already deposited cabins and signed up for that cruise, and we're excited about that. And once again, anyone out there that would like to join us, get in touch with me. My email address is in the show notes, and just get a hold of me and say you want to find out more about the cruise. It's October 23rd of 2016, leaving Fort Lauderdale, 4 nights, very reasonably priced, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And now, let's get to my guest this week, from Precision Nutrition, Brian St. Pierre. Thank you so much for taking time with me today, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, I found you scouring through Kevin Larrabee's podcasts, and I went, wow, this guy sounds cool. He sounds like a lot of fun, and he obviously knows a lot, so he'll make an awesome guest. And I flat out told Kevin, I'm going to just poach guests because he's, you know, been doing this for like 10 years, and I'm like, you know, show number 30. So he said, right, go for it. There's some good people there. There's some people there I wouldn't ask back. I said, give me the list of who you wouldn't ask back.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Kevin's an old friend. I mean, we, back in my days working at Cressy Sports Performance, you know, Kevin interned there, and I knew Kevin even before that. You know, these days he's working with Mike Boyle. But yeah, I've been on the FitCast quite a few times, I think, now. So yeah, Kevin's a great guy, and I'm glad I was able to at least give a good impression and cause you to reach out. So that's always nice to hear.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like what I've told Kevin, and I'll repeat it again because he is 10 years in. I said, when I grow up, I want to be just like you.
That sounds good.
And, you know, I'm twice his age, but that's beside the point.
I'm not sure if Kevin's quite grown up yet, but that's an intentional, he's a perpetual... You know, he loves video games and he loves his, which is awesome, man. He's a child at heart, and I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Oh, well, I'm 57 going on maybe 20-ish, so. So let's get into you, though, instead of talking about Kevin. All right.
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's get into your background. You're supposed to be an engineer. What happened?
Well, I didn't like it very much, and I spent more time... Yeah, I did my first 3 years of college as an engineering major, and I spent more time, you know, reading about training and nutrition on johnberardi.com, you know, prior to the PN days, bodybuilding.com's forums. So, you know, Alan Aragon was kind of like the king of in the early 2000s, and yeah, I just finally... I had people talking to me my freshman year who barely knew me trying to talk me into switching out of engineering and into nutrition because it was something I was always really interested in and passionate about. So I pretty much sucked at engineering because I didn't have any interest in it. I was good at math and good at science, but it was a passionless skill, you know. So I finally, after my junior year, switched over, and the rest is history.
Cool. What is your training background? What originally brought you to the weights? Because I think we all started in the same place, but let's hear your version of it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was an athlete growing up. You know, I played hockey, soccer, lacrosse, and probably around when I was really young, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, my dad used to take me to the gym, you know, and he'd like work out, and I would just kind of, you know, maybe not quite 4, 5, 6, something like that, follow him around this old gym under this, you know, big armory that like all these serious lifters went to. My dad was like a semi-serious lifter. And then as he had more kids, that kind of faded away. And then when I was about 8th grade, you know, he had gained some weight, and he lost about 25 pounds. Yeah, he's kept off since then. So you're talking almost, you know, about 20 years, he's kept that off. And so that had kind of, it brought nutrition more to the forefront. He didn't openly really talk about it much, but it was more like, you know, he was lead by example more than anything else. So he ate better and started exercising again. And so as a young athlete kind of entering high school, I kind of became more aware of it, got interested in lifting. So kind of started doing it then, asking my dad things. He helped me out. And then as I got into college, you know, it became a much bigger passion. So I played junior hockey in college. I played highly competitive rugby. So it was also somewhat required to be successful at that level and to stay healthy. When you're playing, you know, I was a small guy for a forward in rugby. So I needed to lift to be able to play competitively at that level. So that kind of got me into it. And then, you know, after I graduated, I got my CSES and went and interned at Cressy Sports Performance. And, you know, that was like entering a whole new world. You know, everything I know about programming and exercise comes from Eric and Tony and the crew down there. So that's kind of how it all started and where it took me.
Okay. Were there ever any aspirations of competitive lifting, powerlifting, bodybuilding, Olympic lifting, or was it always an adjunct to your athleticism, your sports?
There were considerations, you know, like we would, you know, at Cressy Sports Performance for the staff, we definitely had a competitive lifting environment. I think it hurts Eric's ego to this day that I could always out front squat him. And I remember as an intern, like not even trying to out front squat him, I beat his staff record unintentionally and then, you know, busted his chops about it a little bit. And the very next day he came in to retest, you know, his 1RM front squat and beat me. And then a couple months later I beat him again and he was unable to do it, unable to top that. So which really, really bothered him. I mean, he tried on several occasions. He probably won't admit it bothered him, but if you ask Tony or other staff members, they'll tell you, you know, Eric has a hard time not being the king of the mountain and some of that stuff in a good way. So it was a good competitive environment. You know, so I got really strong there. And I considered, you know, we had guys who trained there and powerlifted. Obviously, Eric was a powerlifter. So I definitely considered it. I would have, if I had competed, I would have probably done pretty well, but never ended up actually pulling the trigger. You know, just didn't really pique my interest enough to get into that world. I enjoyed lifting, but I enjoyed lifting for beyond just being strong, especially these days. I like being strong, but I also just want to be healthy, move well, you know, improve my quality of life, allow me to play with my kids, you know, just have an overall level of fitness where I can play my men's league hockey, I can play with my kids, I can go for a run, or I can lift, you know, move some, you know, pretty quality weights. So it's kind of, it's evolved over time, but definitely considered it back in the day for sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you were working with Eric, that was definitely the get big, get strong environment, wasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's we all pushed each other, and you know, trying to keep up with Eric on the deadlift, for example, was, you know, that's where he would reassert his lifting dominance over me by having, you know, we'd retest our deadlift soon after the front squat just so we could make sure I was put in my place as in a good way, in a competitive way. Let it be known that, you know, that's where he could still beat me. But it was a phenomenal work experience.
Okay, so your front squat's 10 pounds heavier than mine, but I can still out deadlift you by 100 pounds.
That's right. It was 20 pounds on the front squat, which really irks him. But yeah, his deadlift was probably, I think he pulled 660. I think my best was 550. So he could pull. That man could deadlift with the best of them. Had a body weight of like 185. You know, it's scary.
That's some very, very respectable numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in there, you said you got the CSCS. You also got CISSN, I believe.
I did. I have to think when I got that. That's probably around the same time. Yeah, I got my CSCS the summer after I graduated college, before I started my internship with Eric. Yeah, I did the CISSN. Honestly, I'd have to go back and look, probably somewhere around the same time, within that same year. You know, and then after I worked for Eric for about 3 years, my wife and I wanted to move back to Maine. She was doing a residency back up in Maine, where we're from. And so I went back to the University of Maine to get my master's and to become a dietitian. So otherwise I would have had a very, very hard time. I still had a hard time. I would have had a very hard time leaving Cressy Performance.
Okay. And for anyone that's listening, the CSCS is Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist. And CISSN, I don't know what it stands for, but it's one of the most respected nutrition certifications that you could get.
Yeah, I think you're just a certified sports nutritionist through the International Society of Sports Nutritionists.
I think you actually have to have a degree to sit for that one, a degree in something anyway.
Yeah, I think you have to have a bachelor's degree in a scientific field. I have to go back and look. It's been so long since I took it. I don't recall off the top of my head what the qualifications were. Same thing with the CSCS. You actually have to have, I'm pretty sure you have to have a college degree to take the CSCS as well. Not sure how related it has to be. I'd have to go back and double check, but I'm pretty sure for at least one of the two, but possibly both. Yeah.
I know for the CISSN, you have to have a degree because a friend of mine who's a strength coach and has his master's in exercise phys took that. And I said, well, I'd be interested in doing it. And he said, well, you don't have a degree, but they do another certification. ISSN right. has their main, you know, the CISSN, and then they have a, for us that never finished college, degree.
Well, you know, it's still get you out there, still get you started. You know, it's not necessarily, certification is not the be all end all. It's just a representation of a baseline knowledge, but you can far exceed or in some ways far underwhelm your certifications after your name. So they're not everything.
As we've both seen by observing innumerable personal trainers in facilities that don't have a clue.
And look at guys like Dan John, for example. I mean, how much knowledge does that guy have? You know, versus, does he have 47 letters after his name? You know, not to my knowledge. You know, same thing with like Mike Boyle. How much knowledge does Mike have versus the letters after his name? He helped create the CSCS and never even got his CSCS.
That's, you know, and so. Dan, I think Dan's an RKC and an SFG, but no real quote-unquote coaching or personal training certification, and I think he's doing his own certification now, just like Mike is, so.
And, you know, two of the best in the world at what they do, so, you know, it's not to discourage people from getting certifications, but to recognize that the certification is one thing, being able to apply that knowledge and apply it skillfully can be something else entirely.
And the sad thing is they're getting more and more meaningless because every time I look online, there are more of them available.
Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the beast. You know, it's a way for some companies to make money, and it's a way to also help give people somewhat consistent basis of knowledge. You know, at least, okay, if you have this certification, you've at least learned these X, Y, and Z things about this topic. So right. I see some value in it. I think as we progress and as they evolve, it'll get better. Right now, I think it's so early in the certification process, really, in terms of how it's exploding in growth. It's going to be a bit of a mess. And I think part of it will kind of, you know, things will shorten. Other things that aren't worthwhile will be discarded. And it'll kind of compress back down to a more reasonable number of options.
Well, I think the good thing that we're starting to see, and I see it with the certification that Kevin works with Mike. What is it? The CSFC? Certified Functional Strength Coach. You have a practical. You and some of the others that are out there now, the Dan John is a 3-day workshop. It's a practical. It's a hands-on. As opposed to all of these, sit down online, take the open book test, pay your $500. You're certified.
Right. It's you're showing you can actually apply the theory. You don't just have the... I mean, I could go read a textbook and spout off all kinds of, you know, training theories and, you know, stage system and post-activation potentiation. I could talk about all that, but I might not have a damn clue how to actually coach someone through all of those things. You know, if I've never experienced it myself or coach people through it, knowledge is great, but applied knowledge, you know, is even better. And then after that, applied knowledge plus experience kind of gives you some wisdom, but you can't accumulate that until you can at least apply the knowledge.
Just like everything else, you can only learn so much in a book.
That's right.
Talk about their approach and why they approach things as they do as far as measuring foods.
Yeah, I think what it stems from is, you know, a lot of people in the fitness industry lead what I call like a fitness life, right? Like it's super important to them. It's one of their top priorities, if not their top priority. So they make it out to be, it's just an incredibly important part of their life. So they plan out their meals and they get more complicated and in-depth into their nutrition. And that's fine, you know, but they've walked down that path a long way. And then they go to work with clients and their clients are starting at the beginning of that path. And rather than progressing them down that path in the same way they did, which went over time, oftentimes what you see, and I was guilty of this in the past, you try to take that client from where they at to where you are right now, and you spend years getting there. You know, you can't accelerate it that fast. And so at PN, what we've also found is most people don't want to live that way. Like they don't want to live a fitness life. They want to utilize fitness and nutrition to help empower them to do what they want to do, you know, to help facilitate their priorities, whether that be playing with their kids or getting off some medications or just allowing them to feel and move better than they have. So most people we've found over time don't want to get that in-depth and that intense into their nutrition. So what we usually do for most clients is, yeah, we use what we call our hand-sized portion guide. So we use your hands to kind of measure portions for men and women. So it would be palms for protein, fists for veggies, handfuls for carbs, that can be starch or fruit, and thumbs for fats. So we usually do this on like a per meal basis. You know, assuming you eat about 4 times per day, and we put men at about 2 palms of protein at each meal, 2 fists of vegetables, 2 handfuls of carbs, and 2 thumbs of fats, and women at about 1 serving of each of those. Now, the important thing to keep in mind is, you know, that's just meant to be a really easy per meal ballpark to help people make sure they're getting an adequate protein, to help meet their protein needs, you know, for satiety, for lean mass retention or muscle gain, all the other things that protein does for you, to get plenty of vegetables into your diet, to get adequate amounts of carbs to help you fuel your training and recover from your training, and then to get adequate amounts of healthy fats for hormone production, immunity, things of that nature, so that nothing's really skewed too high or way too low. But it's just a starting point, right? I mean, most active men, you know, probably need about 6 to 8 servings of each of those things a day. The per meal recommendations give you about 8. But that's just meant to be an easy starting ballpark or framework. It's not meant to be an exact number per se. So you can adjust that based on your own goals and needs and ultimately results. And for women, you know, that works out to about 4 servings of everything per day. But I'd actually say, or we actually say, most active women need about 4 to 6. But we weren't going to try to make the per meal ones 1 to 1.5. This becomes too confusing. So as a starting ballpark, we go with 2 of everything for men, 1 of everything for women. But in reality, you have a little bit more flexibility in there to adjust it based on, like I said, your needs, your goals, your age, your activity levels, and ultimately your results. And we do that for a lot of reasons. You know, one, because calorie counting just isn't all that accurate. On the front end, like the amount of calories you consume from food, it's an average. It can be up to about 25% off on a label versus what a food actually contains because of where it was grown, when it was grown, the soil it was grown in, the year it was grown in, how it was harvested. I mean, there are many, many, many variables. And 25% is pretty high. It's usually probably not quite about that high, but it can be about 25% off. Then you can get into the processing of food actually allows, you know, increased absorption. And there can be many different arguments you can go down, many different streams you can go down, how some people absorb more than others because of the different bacteria they have in their GI tracts. And on the other end, you have the like calories out equation. You know, I predict based on these models, Bill, you should burn 2,000 calories a day. Well, those models aren't perfect, right? They're also based on an average. They're based on a bell curve. There are outliers. There are people who burn less and people who burn more. And so if you can be 25% off on each end, you can be way off, you know, and not understand how the math's not working out on your in versus out totals. So what we really teach is getting people to focus on what we would call, like, rather than an external locus of control, the number of calories eaten, an internal locus of control, you know, by focusing on your appetite and your satiation cues. Are you hungry? Yes, then eat. And only eat until you're satisfied. You eat it slowly and mindfully using those portion sizes that we recommended, because that way you'll learn to control your calorie intake without having to count calories or do fancy calorie math And actually, there's lots of research that shows that just increasing mindfulness of your intake and eating that way will drastically reduce calorie intake just by becoming more aware. And then you add that on top of getting those portion sizes like we talked about, it controls your calorie intake and it controls your macronutrients, again, without having to calculate things and know exactly how much protein you're eating and how much fat you're eating. It takes care of the math for you. So it's really, really convenient. It's really easy to implement, and it works really well for most people.
Well, it's kind of more realistic and more real world. And you made a very good point, the mindfulness thing, because I've read in a couple places that just by starting to keep track, by journaling people's food intake, they start to lose weight because they become more conscious of what they're eating, and whether they try to or not, they kind of start to clean it up. What is the PN, or more accurately, Brian's feeling on food journaling?
That's a good question, because food journaling can be a bit of a double-edged sword. It depends on why you're doing it. You know, if you're doing it to just become more aware of your intake, I think it can be incredibly valuable, just like you talked about. You know, oftentimes, you know, people don't always realize, like, oh, they think they have a treat, you know, a couple times a week, but they forget that they had French fries on Tuesday and they had some ice cream on, you know, at the office party on Wednesday. It's not intentional. It's just human nature. You know, it's been shown over and over again that people underreport their intake because they simply don't recall it that well. It's hard to remember everything you've eaten over an entire week if you just don't pay that much attention to it. So by recording it, you know, judgment-free, just to kind of get some data points, you know, just to kind of see what does my intake actually look like, it can be eye-opening to realize that maybe you don't eat as well as you think you do, or you snack more than you think you do, or whatever the case may be. However, it can get people in trouble when they start to do it as a means to track their intake all the time. Oh, I got to track this. I want to track my calorie intake. I got to track this. It can become, you get a point of diminishing returns where now you're using it in a way that can kind of create what I would consider to be like some obsessive or compulsive approaches, or even a somewhat disordered approach to food. You know, I don't want people to have to feel like they need to log their food every single day for the rest of their life in order to eat. That sounds miserable to me. You know, logging on occasion just to kind of check yourself and make sure to hold yourself accountable, to make sure you are doing what you want to do and not adding in extra things unnecessarily or beyond what you're willing to allow yourself. That's where it can be helpful. But it's just something to be mindful of and be careful with. And it's a tool that when used appropriately can be super helpful. But like many other tools, when used inappropriately or kind of abused, you know, can take you backwards a little bit.
Well, you just made one good point. People really don't remember what they ate, and it's kind of mindless, like you said. And if I start working with a new client and we're going to work with their nutrition, I'll always ask them to keep for one full week an accurate food journal for me. That way I can see, you know, that's the baseline. Okay, if you're eating lots of junk, it's going to be easy to cut a little of the junk out and you're going to see results. You know, it just, and they'll invariably say, well, I normally eat, I don't want to know. And that, but this is what I had to, I don't want to know. Just write everything down for a week. I don't care if it's good, it's bad. You get up in the middle of the night, you have an Oreo and a swig of milk out of the milk carton. I don't care. Just write it all down. And we've got square one.
But I think you highlighted an important thing as a coach is to make sure to emphasize with clients that it's not meant to be you know, something that you're going to judge and, you know, kind of give them that feeling of shame and embarrassment. It's just meant to collect information for me to know where you're at right now so I can help you get where you want to be. You know, it's not exactly meant to be like, man, you are eating like shit and we got a lot of work to do. You know, it's just meant to be an assessment. It's just meant to be, okay, let's just see where you're at so I can help you get where you want to go. I know as a young coach myself, I didn't do a good enough job with that. I didn't realize that's how many people felt. They felt like they would be judged or made to feel badly about themselves if they weren't eating as well as I was eating, for example. And as I've gotten older, I've just become more aware of the fact that people can feel very self-conscious of their food intake. And to make sure when you use a food log with clients that you do it in a way where they don't feel vulnerable.
Yeah, that's really the key. You got to make it clear. I'm not going to criticize you. I'm not going to laugh at you. And usually I'll say, and you know, hey, I had ice cream last night, or my wife and I went out for pizza last weekend. So don't stress it. You know, just let me see what you do.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. I was looking on your blog, one of your day in the life things. I just happened to notice. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I see very, very limited supplements. What are your thoughts in general on, you know, supplement use?
In general, I think there are a few valuable supplements that I think most people would benefit from taking. But for the most part, I just think there are many, many, many supplements that are not necessarily beneficial or can even be downright problematic or harmful, especially when we know that as they've tested products, something as much as like 20% are contaminated with banned substances because it boosts the results from those supplements, so it can help boost sales. But if you're someone who's concerned about health as much as you are performance, that's something you want to be cognizant of. So I tend to stick with simple, tried and true supplements that I know will give me a return on my investment. So like I like to do, you know, protein powder helps me get my protein intake every day. When I use it, I make it in a super shake, which I'm actually drinking right now as we speak. You know, a super shake is something where I use those same hand size guidelines, but I put it all in a big smoothie that I blend up. So in this case, it's like 2 scoops of protein, 2 fists of spinach, because you don't really taste spinach in a smoothie, 2 handfuls of carbs. And I toss in some chia seeds and a little bit of yogurt. And then I blend it all up, and that's one of my meals every day. So it's just a really super easy meal. It's convenient. It's tasty. I don't have to prep anything. I don't have to clean up a big meal. I just rinse out my blender after, you know, so stuff along those lines. I take and recommend fish oil for most people. There are some exceptions, but for most people, you know, a moderate amount of fish oil can definitely be helpful. A multivitamin just to help make sure you don't have any nutrient deficiencies, and you know, just to help fill in the gaps as you will, like a nutritional insurance. So the multivitamins I recommend are really simple ones, things that give you, you know, like 100% of your daily value needs. I'm not a big advocate of ones that provide 6,000% of this vitamin and 12,000% of that vitamin. You don't need levels that high, and levels that high can actually cause more harm than benefit, because you should be getting a good amount from your food as well. You know, so it's just to help fill in gaps and make sure you're not deficient. You know, beyond that, beyond those three, you know, there might be a few others depending on the person, maybe some creatine if they're an athlete or if they're, you know, looking to maximize power output, you know, maybe some curcumin if they need anti-inflammatory benefits or if they have an autoimmune condition or something along those lines. There can be some other, you know, individual cases, maybe a green supplement if they travel a lot and therefore have a harder time getting in their fruit and vegetable intake. Maybe some vitamin D in the winter, especially if you live in a northern climate like I do in Maine. You know, things along those lines. But as a general rule, I'm pretty much a supplement minimalist because there are very few that have a strong and consistent body of evidence to support their benefits for most people.
Okay, you mentioned curcumin. That's an herb, right? Or a spice. Tell me a little about that. I've seen, you know, it mentioned in places, but I know very little about it. And I know it's supposed to be really beneficial.
Yeah, curcumin is like the active compounds. It's actually a mix of compounds, curcuminoids, in turmeric, depending on how you want to pronounce it, that exert quite a few pretty interesting effects on the human body. They are shown to be, you know, like powerfully anti-inflammatory. They can help with certain conditions, especially like if you have some joint issues like arthritis. It's been shown to be helpful. I actually suffer from a very mild case of psoriasis, and it can be helpful there. So things along those lines. It can also be just an anti-inflammatory in general, which for most people, you know, taking some on an everyday basis isn't a bad idea. People kind of tend to overemphasize the negative effects of some inflammation. I mean, you need inflammation. That's how you recover from a workout. It's how you recover from an injury. It's how you recover from being sick. The inflammatory response is a normal and necessary part of life. But some people have chronic low level, like ongoing inflammation, that we get concerned. And that's where just taking some curcumin every day can kind of help modulate that and attenuate that a little bit. So it's something, I don't necessarily encourage it to everybody as a baseline supplement, but it can be beneficial if you're someone who's concerned about something like that.
Okay. So would you say it has a potentially more beneficial value than the more costly glucosamine chondroitin joint care kind of products out there?
Yeah, it has a broader range of benefits. You know, However, if you're someone who's suffering, let's say, from specifically joint issues, to my knowledge, they work through different mechanisms. So taking both would actually probably be your best bet in terms of improving joint health. If you have really mild joint issues or an occasional joint issue and you're not really willing to invest in, you know, the MSM glucosamine chondroitin mixture, curcumin can be a really good like first step. If it worsens over time, maybe you have them both. Fish oil also helps with joint health to a degree as well. So I wouldn't say it's going to replace it, especially if you have semi-significant joint issues. It can be a nice addition or adjunct. So some of those things depend on the person and on the situation, but for the most part, it can be a beneficial supplement, especially if you have like some osteoarthritis or something like that. Sure.
Okay, so for everybody out there that's got a few aches and pains, fish oil and the curcumin would be worthwhile having in your diet, not to mention for their other benefits as well.
Right.
Okay. You mentioned protein powders. You don't endorse anybody. PN doesn't endorse anybody. Neither do I. So we're not going to get into any heat over this next question. Do you have any feelings on brands that you prefer and brands that you think are overrated maybe on the protein, your personal choices?
Not really. I mean, I've kind of flip-flopped back and forth. Lately, I've been getting my protein through like truenutrition.com and just kind of making my own label-free mixture. You know, that way I'm not paying for, you know, a fancy label or a big name. You know, there are some really good products out there. And again, somewhat it depends. Like if I'm working with, like I do some work with the Spurs and the Browns and some other, NHL players and Major League baseball players and stuff like that. When I work with those athletes, I'll only use like NSF certified for sport products or HSL products, things that I know won't get them popped on a test. Would they be my choice for myself personally? Like some of them, you know, might have, you know, artificial sweeteners that I might prefer to just not have in mine because that's just personal preference. Do I think it's going to be detrimental to that player? Not really, but it's not going with a different product that doesn't have those, that's not NSF certified, isn't worth the trade-off to me because getting them to fail a test would be far worse than consuming a few artificial sweeteners here and there. So it's risk to benefit, that risk to benefit ratio, you know, and that changes per person. But for most of my clients and or for myself, you know, I just look for a reputable company at a reasonable price, like Optimum Nutrition makes some decent stuff. You know, there are some other products out there that are more expensive, like BioTrust makes a good product, but it's not cheap. I don't tend to use it because of the inulin in it, which tends to bother my GI tract, but other people like Dr. Berardi at PN, he loves it. It's what he uses every day. So there are lots of products. We also just have to find what works for you. And so I tend to really like the True Nutrition site because I can make my own mixtures. I do like a whey and casein blend. I just find that's what holds me over best. And I feel like I recover a little better that way. Might just be in my head, but there is some research to support it as well. So I'm not a big like particular brand guy. I just tell people to, you know, you want to find a simple product that's going to contain protein. It's going to contain, you know, whatever sweetener you're comfortable with. You know, maybe an enzyme like an aminogen or some type of enzyme formulation that helps with assimilation of the protein. It's actually been shown to help with getting more amino acids into your bloodstream. Other than that, I mean, there shouldn't be, you don't need a product with 40 ingredients in it. You know, that's the kind of thing I caution people against, or paying crazy money for popular trendy products. Usually there's no extra proof they do any extra benefit for you other than having some really incredible word of mouth marketing. And you're just paying, you know, whole lot of extra money for a fancy brand name or a fancy label.
True Nutrition. I'm going to have to check them out because I don't do real well with whey. So I need a little bit of whey mixed with either some beef-based protein or some casein or something else, because whey just really messes with me.
Yeah, no, they're great. And they have plant-based protein powders. So if you want to add like some pea protein or something like that to yours, they have grass-fed whey. They have like a, you know, a cheap whey concentrate or, you know, a higher level whey hydrolysate. They've kind of got whatever you want. There are only actually so many whey manufacturers out there. So a lot of companies get the same whey from the same manufacturer and just have very different price points, you know, for nearly the same product. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that you're not paying for the upsell of the brand or the label. You're just getting a good product at a good price.
Excellent. Okay, well, everybody needs to check out True Nutrition. I'm going to when we finish this interview. Since we're talking about supplements, and when you're dealing with your hardcore athletes, say a competitive athlete, a powerlifter, a bodybuilder, or one of your pros, where do you think we're? I think it's out of control with pre-workout, a post-workout, and maybe even an intra-workout product. What are your thoughts on that? It's just too much junk.
Oh, I mean, I can tell you, I don't work with a lot of bodybuilders these days. I've had bodybuilders approach me, but I tend to refer that out to people who just work with bodybuilders. You know, it's not an area I profess to be an expert in. It's not a population I've done much work in. But I thought of like the pro athlete guys I work with. It amazes me some of the things that they'll be using to get amped up for a workout, and they'll want to do X, Y, and Z. Really what I try to encourage a lot of them to do, and it's simple, because most of them struggle with their overall food intake. You know, they might do really well with a protein shake post-workout, but their overall food intake isn't spectacular. So I utilize whole food for their, like, essentially their pre- and post-workout stuff. You know, for a lot of those players, it might be, you know, they come in for breakfast, you know, we make sure they get in the breakfast. We use those same hand-sized portion guidelines. Obviously, they're a little bit tweaked for some of the pro athletes because they just have higher needs. Same kind of setup, you know, an hour or two before they get in their lift. And then what we do during workout depends on their needs. If they're a guy, you know, like for the Browns, for example, they've been trying to get their guys, they want to play at a faster pace, they want to get guys leaner. So a lot of them we just have doing like some BCAAs while they train, help to maintain their muscle mass. It's a BCAA mixture. So it also has electrolytes and fluids, so it keeps them hydrated during their workout and during like their light practices they might do with a workout in addition. And then post-workout, they'll either have like a big super shake or a meal with a small super shake or just a meal, whatever their personal preference is. That's a pretty standard approach for me. If they're a guy who needs to gain weight, you know, we'll do a protein plus carbohydrate mixture during their workout. You know, they have some different products that they use. That's my general rule of thumb for some of the athletes. If they're looking to lose weight, you know, well, obviously we'll do, like I said, the aminos, the BCAAs and water. If they're looking to gain weight, we'll do like a protein plus carbohydrate drink just to get in extra calories, extra protein and carbs during the workout. For less advanced individuals, you know, if you're coming to me and you're pretty new at this whole game, I'm not the least bit concerned about your intra-workout nutrition. I want to focus on the big picture with you. We need to focus on what I would consider to be like the fundamentals of nutrition before we worry about the, you know, the icing on the cake, which is, you know, workout nutrition. I want to get the cake baked first, then we can worry about the icing. You know, so I have them focus on getting those hand-sized portions, getting a consistent intake, you know, eating mindfully, those kind of things. You know, and I still make sure they have something with protein and carbs, one of their meals, an hour or two before and an hour or two after their workouts. Because the research has shown, Alan Aragon and crew have put together some really phenomenal research review papers the past few years going over post-workout nutrition and the anabolic window of opportunity and protein timing. And that's what the research shows. You have about 1 to 2 hours pre- and post-workout. As long as your pre- and post-workout meals are separated by, you know, no more than 4 to 5 hours, you're going to be golden. You don't need to have super fancy products in, you know, during workout, pre-workout, post-workout. Those things aren't necessarily bad or detrimental, but they're not necessarily superior either. You know, and if you've got everything else in place, you've got your pre- and post-workout meals, and you want to play around with some intra-workout nutrition stuff, because you're trying to push the limit and you're really into this, okay, that's fine. You know, we can play around with some BCAAs or protein and carb mixture during your workout or whatever. But for most people, most clients, you know, that's far from where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. So it's not the area I focus on first.
Okay. And you brought up a question here in my mind, and this is how my interviews always go. I never have a form because you're going to say something and it's going to make me think of something else to ask. Okay, the BCAAs mixed with water, they're pretty much a pre-digested, a very light thing, but it seems to me, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but if I were to be drinking a, you know, high protein, high carb shake during my workout, I would feel like that would make me feel sluggish and that would maybe be taking away from my workout. Not the case?
Well, you know, it's not really like a incredibly high protein, incredibly high carb beverage. You're talking like 15 grams of an easily digested protein and 30 to 45 grams of an easily digested carbohydrate. You know, so something like a whey hydrolysate with, you know, a mixture of maltodextrin, and you know, it could be glucose. I tend to prefer like a glucose and fructose combination. That's what the research seems to support as being the best and the most easily digested, because they don't compete for the same transporters. They have different transporters that absorb them, so it can be taken in faster with less GI distress. So yeah, it needs to be a very appropriate. It's not, we're not talking 40 grams of protein and 100 grams of carbs while you're working out, because you're right, that's going to make you feel awful. It's generally a pretty light thing, but still going to provide you another, you know, 250 calories during your day, whereas that BCAA mixture will probably provide you, you know, very few. Maybe it depends if you really count BCAAs as calorie providing. I probably would, but you're probably talking a 200 calorie difference between the two mixtures. So it's not meant to be a really large, heavy drink. It's still trying to keep the solute load under like 8%. That's kind of the goal, so that it makes it easy to tolerate and to digest during your workout.
Okay. All right. That makes sense, because I'm thinking of my usual 40, 50 grams of protein, and I'm thinking I would probably be making myself nauseous.
Right. Yeah. I'm not telling you to drink like a big super shake like I'm drinking now. It's probably, you know, 800 calories during your workout. That's probably not going to sit well with anybody. But a 250 calorie mixture that you have, you know, over the course of an hour and a half, you know, that some of these guys are training or longer, you know, they just kind of sip on it throughout. So it's okay. It's not meant to be something you just slug mid-workout, but it's just helping to provide them with extra nutrients and extra calories to help them either gain weight or meet their needs.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I appreciate you kind of expounding on that.
Sure.
And we'll be back next week with the balance of this great interview with Brian St. Pierre of Precision Nutrition. Additionally, next week, Lisa will be back with an interesting article she found on a topic that's a concern of many, many people, cholesterol. In addition to that, I'll have a few announcements, upcoming guests, and some other things going on. And you've been listening to Bill here on Real World Fitness. And hope everybody has a great week, and I'll be back next week. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by audible.com.